Hello, family. I'm Kevin. I'm an adult child.
Hi, Kevin.
I want to thank George, or maybe I should wait till after this is over, for asking me to do this very unique dual pitch. I want to thank all the out-of-towners who came to visit and some of my friends who came out to support me. So I'm very happy to be here. Real quick, my story. I grew up in Orange County. I was the second son or second child of my mother, my father's first child, till they got a divorce when I was about 11 or 12. After that, I only saw my father on weekends. He left to be with another woman, and this woman was actually a member of our family. So it was kind of unique. I'd often said that if it was an airline stewardess or his secretary or a cocktail waitress or something, it would have been maybe a different situation. But this was someone who I grew up with and who I knew intimately. So for him to run away with another woman, I already at a very early age had a resentment against her. Not only was she my evil stepmother, but she was also the other woman who my dad left my mom for. So my mom went to school and became a nurse and left me pretty much to my own devices by 13. I was cooking my own meals, cleaning the house on my own, doing my own laundry, and very early learned to become self-sufficient. You know, I never saw either one of them drunk, maybe occasionally at holidays or parties at Christmas or whatever. So I don't know that there was a lot of alcoholism or addiction early on in my childhood or in their bringing me up, but it became apparent much later on, especially with my mom. My mom was born and raised in Germany before and during the war, so she had an abusive mother, a verbally abusive mother, and kind of a rough upbringing. So I think I cut her a lot of slack because I used to say, well, you know, there was a war going on. She married her first husband, had my sister over in Germany, and then came to the United States, became a United States citizen. My father was born and raised in a Mormon family in Idaho, and he ran away pretty early on, and then he got drafted into the army and went to Korea just as the war was ending, spent some time over there, and came back, went to work for a couple of different companies, and that's where he met my mom. I always got the feeling that I was wanted, that I was loved, that I was a special child. I was the youngest of all of the cousins in my family. Again, I had sort of a unique situation in that the Mormons tend to congregate, so my aunts and uncle and cousins lived across the street, my other aunts and cousins lived three doors down, my other aunts and cousins lived four doors there, and my grandparents were, you know, like six blocks away. So we were all very close. I grew up with a lot of family around me. But I was, like I said, sort of the golden child. I was the youngest of all of them, and there were great expectations. I was going to become a doctor or a lawyer or a CEO or a president or I don't know what, but there was a lot of pressure because I was, you know, the youngest. And I had such a bright future, plenty of potential, which I immediately wasted. Very, very early on, and this is where we'll get into the relationships part, I've always set myself up for abandonment, and I'm so grateful to this program. There's so much in here that I identify with because probably about second grade, there was a girl who was completely infatuated with me. She would send me love letters in the mail, scented with perfume, and she'd write, you know, song lyrics on it. And this is like second grade, and I didn't want to have anything to do with her because I was lusting after the only Hawaiian girl that was in our school. I thought she was gorgeous. She had dark skin, long black silky hair. She was Hawaiian, and she didn't even know I existed. So early on, I had already set myself up for abandonment. You know, I mean, here was a girl who probably would have jumped through hoops of fire for me, and I didn't want to do anything with her because Diane Lai was, you know, stealing my heart. And I'm sure that I broke her heart. Somewhere I should probably write her a letter of amends, because I was not interested. And that's pretty much how I set myself up for relationships through the rest of my life. In high school, people started pairing up and having steady boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, and I did not. I just did not have a girlfriend in high school. And then I could not wait to get out of Orange County. I had gone up to Northern California and visited San Francisco and fell in love. I found where I thought I needed to be. And I thought, well, you know, it's college, and there's a lot of drinking going on, and I'd gotten involved with this outdoor theater group. Some of you, I may have heard my story before. I joined up with the Renaissance Fair people, and there was lots of drugs and lots of sex, and I thought, man, if I can't get laid here, there's something wrong with me. So I hung out there for a long, long time. I was with those people. I originally started down here in Agoura, at the original Renaissance Fair, and then I moved up north where they had sort of their winter quarters, kind of like a circus, you know. That's where we overwintered. People would live on the property that the company owned, and I did that for a couple of years until I got settled. Again, you know, I'm going to college, no like real steady relationships, and this is kind of where my pattern again developed, where I would find a woman or a young lady that I was interested in, and I would just work them. I'd just wear them down. I'd just chip away at them until finally, either out of pity or just exhaustion, they would say, all right, you know, let's do it. And then I would completely lose interest. That was the thing that, until I came here, or until I got in recovery, that I just didn't realize was the pattern that I'd had. And again, for those of you who don't know me, the end of this next month, I'll have 2 years in this program, and I'll have 10 years sober in AA. So starting next month. And God bless you if you're here and you've come straight from here and found this on your own or through a friend and not through other 12-step recovery programs. I've told my co-sponsor, I don't think I could survive the work that is ahead of me without some sort of a safety net. I've worked the 12 steps in AA, and I'm really grateful for everything that I've done there. The fourth and fifth step with my first sponsor really opened my eyes and was, I mean, I've had a spiritual awakening. And I realized a couple of years ago that although I was sober and I kept hearing about this emotional sobriety, that I wasn't quite there yet. And I didn't think that, oh, at 10 years, you know, I should have this whole thing figured out. But I was still noticing there was a lot of behaviors, a lot of thinking and patterns to my life that hadn't improved any, even though I was coming up on, you know, a couple of years, I'm going to have 10 years. So I was really beginning to question my motives and my intentions with recovery. I don't have the desire to drink anymore. I don't have the craving for alcohol. I don't need to escape into the bottle, which is what I'd done for so many years. I drank for 32 years, and a lot of it was to numb myself from the pain that I caused others and that I felt that I had suffered at the hands of others, or with all these bad relationships, constantly setting myself up for abandonment and all of the issues that we talk about that have been handed to us. So I'll get to how I came in here. Or maybe I should talk about how I met Monica first. I don't know, because they're sort of intertwined. Again, real quick part of my story. I was living here in Santa Barbara. I was sober. I had been helping to run a sober house, and they had decided it was time for me to move on and make room for the next guy, which was reasonable, but I hadn't prepared myself. So I was really in a dead panic. Well, this is how God works in my life. My parents out of nowhere showed up, and of course, being the person that I am, I catastrophize from one end to the other. It's like, okay, they're either going to cut me off and say, look, we can't support you anymore, you know, you're gonna have to pay your own rent and make your own way, and we're done with this, we're really glad you're sober, but no more. Or I thought, well, you know, Christmas is coming and maybe they're bringing me an early Christmas present. So it was either gonna be something really great or it was gonna be, you know, the end. And I didn't know what to do. I had asked my sponsor at the time, you know, this, I don't know, I'm crazy, what am I gonna do? And he says, pretend I'm your higher power. What do you want from me? And I said, I just want some glimmer, some glimpse, just a smidgen of an idea of what your will is for me. And he said, well, you're gonna find out. You know? Wait and see. So of course it was neither one of those things. It was something that I could not have planned for. They had come to ask me to move back up to Cambria and run their hotel for them because my brother had decided out of the blue to move to New Zealand. Long story, another share. So I was like, wow, turns out I need a place to live and a job. So I thought, well, again, this is God working in my life. This is my higher power doing for me what I can't do for myself. I get to make amends to my parents, a living amends. I get to go and pay them back for everything that they've done for me over the past 6 or 7 years, whatever it was at that time. And I'm helping them out. I'm running the business for them. This is what a great opportunity. So I moved back up to Cambria. My brother decided that he was going to quit right away. I had no breathing time. I was there like literally 24 hours and I had to go to work like the next day. So I'm working, and I got a new sponsor up there. I took everyone's advice. I treated myself like a newcomer. I got 3 commitments. I went to 90 and 90. I got a new sponsor. I was working my AA program. And at my Monday night book study, which was my home group up there, I kept seeing this beautiful young lady was walking in. It was obvious she was going to the Al-Anon meeting in the other room. This was sort of a community center, kind of like an Alano club where we had a lot of 12-step meetings. And but it was also non-recovery related. They did a lot of work for seniors and for disadvantaged children. So I finally got up the courage one night because she was wearing some really tight jeans and a nice sweater to ask my sponsor, who is that? I keep seeing her in here. And he says, oh, that's Monica. Now you should know my sponsor for the previous 4 or 5 months have been trying to get me to join the board of this community center. So we need some new fresh blood. It'd be great. You're enthusiastic. We need some help. We need a young guy that can help us move chairs and tables and get all this stuff organized. You're on fire, man. I want you to join the board. And I'm like, I'm running the motel. I don't have time. He's like, it's one meeting a month, really. You know, we have a few events. It's not going to take a lot of your time, but I really want you to join the board. And I said, I don't think I'm ready. I got to get settled here, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he says, Monica's on the All right. He says, we got a big New Year's Eve event coming up that we're planning. We want to have a big, sober New Year's Eve. And, you know, we need some help. And Monica's agreed to help, you know, organize this. And I really think you ought to join the board. Alright, okay. I think actually previous to that I'd seen Monica in the parking lot with her dog child, Max. And then, you know, may know Max. And I went out and I did my usual, hi, I'm Kevin, what's your name? I see you in here a lot, cute dog. And she had her sunglasses on, and no, I gotta go, I'm busy, she's Logan Max. And I thought, same old story, you know, they don't want anything to do with me. I don't know what's wrong with me, and it's my looks, it's my personality, I don't know what it is. But she later admitted that it wasn't me. She just was in a bad headspace, and she just wasn't ready. So I was like, hey, I totally get it. But so we started working together, and that's how we met, and that's how we got to know each other. In and out, I helped her with moving and lots of other things I even tried to get her a job at the motel, and my parents had interviewed her and they said, yeah, she's qualified, but we just don't think it's a good idea, you know. We know you too well. You're going to get involved with her. It's going to be sticky. It's just not going to be a good situation. Gee, that's really too bad. Well, at least we're on the board together. So. Long story short, we fell in love. I mean, we were seeing each other a lot, and on Valentine's Day, there was a flower vendor out front of the motel. He used to sell roses. We let him use some space, and they always gave us extra bouquets of flowers, so I brought her a bouquet of yellow roses on Valentine's Day at this place she was staying at, and I think that was kind of like our first date, really. I made another inroads. I made another try at it, and it seemed to go a lot better that time. So fast forward to us being married. We decided to get married, and we were living together at the motel, and I wanted to be clear with her about my past. So I tried to be as open and as honest as I could with her and tell her about my past relationships, the women that I'd been, what my pattern was, and the fact that I'd been in recovery and how long it had been and that I was sober and that I was working on trying to be a better person and live by the principles of the program, the AA program. And she took it all in, and then, you know, she shared a lot of things with me. And over the course, before we got married, getting to know each other, I saw that there was someone who I could finally open up with and wasn't judging me, and that I could accept her for her flaws and she could accept me with my flaws. We were two sort of broken people, not trying to fix each other, but working on ourselves. And that being in a loving relationship would help to nurture that, that we would have the support of the other person, but not necessarily be codependent on the other person. The only other serious relationship I'd ever been in was with a woman for about 9 years, and it was great for the first couple of years. I mean, we were really in love and we were infatuated with each other, but it very soon came clear to me, and that was the first time I'd ever heard the term codependent, that we were just becoming enmeshed totally, financially, emotionally. My definition of a codependent is not that I feel responsible for your feelings, but that you are responsible for my feelings. In other words, I need you to validate me. Without you, I'm nothing. I need you to love me so I know I'm lovable, or worthy, or have some level of esteem, you know, that, oh, you want to be with me, so that must mean I have some value. So to me, that's what codependence is. And that's what it was. It was back and forth between the two of us, and we were both in our addictions, and it was just a mess. It went on for way, way too long. And after we had ended it, I found out later that she was cheating on me, so that became a real issue too. I've never been cheated on, and I'm as loyal as a dog. I've never cheated on any woman that I've ever been with, even if it was for 2 weeks. I mean, it was like, you know, she's my girlfriend, or this is the gal I'm with for right now. I mean, I worked for 6 months to get to this point. So. Certainly not going to give it away, right? or endanger it. But that, again, that was my usual pattern. And there were two other women that I was involved with, not for very long, but they would tell me right up front, yeah, you know, we can go out, we can date, or you can be my boyfriend, but I'm really waiting till this guy breaks up with his girlfriend because I really want him. And I'd be like, that's okay. So right out from the start and up front, I knew that this person was going to abandon me, and I just accepted it. It was okay, you know, as long as I'm getting what I want. It's the selfishness of the alcoholic. It's the self-centeredness. As long as I'm getting my needs met, then I don't care about what's happening down the road. I don't care about what's going to happen to you or your emotions or your feelings. As long as I'm getting what I want, that's what matters. And that is, again, I didn't even realize that until I had done a fourth and a fifth step and I, you know, came in here. So how did I come in here? Again, fast forward, we moved up to Santa Barbara after my parents sold the motel. And Monica was getting involved in the Al-Anon community here, and I was going to meetings to support her. I really didn't think Al-Anon was for me. I didn't identify with it for anybody who's in it, and it's helped them. Like, again, it's a great program, but it just, it wasn't fitting for me. I felt weird because I felt like I was my own alcoholic, and that puts me in a weird position, you know. Yes, somebody's drinking problem is affecting my life. She went to the Friday night, it was this one, I think. It was the Saturday night speaker meeting. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I heard the laundry list, and then I read it, and I immediately identified with every one of the traits. I said, I have every one of these. This is where my problem is. This is why my behavior is the way it is. I'm reacting. You know, I get guilt feelings when I stand up for myself. I have a fear of authority, and I can put anyone in a position of authority. They don't have to be the judge or the cop or my boss. I would put women in a position of authority because they had something I wanted, so they have power over me. Anyone who has power over me or control over my life is in a position of authority, and that frightens me. And that has a lot to do with my relationship and how this is helping me. One of the things I still struggle with, and I think a lot of us do, is the vulnerability. To be in a position where you're vulnerable, where your weaknesses, your soft spots, your sore spots are exposed, and somebody can poke them. When you get close to people, they know those buttons, and they push them either intentionally or unintentionally. So that puts you in a position of vulnerability, and that's why I need control. That's why I'm constantly seeking to be in control, because then I'm not vulnerable. I'm either putting up some kind of barrier, or it's like, no, I'm in charge. You're not going to manipulate me. So those are the things that I struggle with. In a marriage, it's, well, I tell you, if you want to learn about your character defects, sponsor people or get married, because that's where you learn where your own character defects are. And it's not easy to have somebody point those out to you, either, you know, like right in your face, like, I think you're having control issues, or seeing how when you're working with someone that you, you know, you're being manipulative, or you're being passive aggressive, or whatever it is. So this program has taught me so much about myself, and now, doing the work with my co-sponsor, I'm just now starting to dig in and do some of the work in the fourth step. In the, a lot of the past is coming up. The whole story, I mean, I could do a whole share just about the relationship with my mom and my dad. You heard how crazy it started. But I always looked at my mother through rose-colored glasses. Not that she was a saint, but that I always made excuses for her. And now, again, I don't know if it was purposeful denial or whether it was just the drinking had numbed my memory, but things are starting to come up about the role models that I have that, I don't want to say generate, but that are the cause of my behaviors today and the way that I have, well, like we read, adopted and adapted these survival traits. Some of this stuff is stuff that was handed to me probably even before I was born. I have this whole theory, if you're at all interested, look up Gabor Mate about his theory on how a lot of our fears and our anxieties and some of the deep, most deep-rooted emotions that we have may have come in utero. And he has a couple of actual anecdotal incidents where people have said, this was all stuff that was given to me before I was born, when I was still in my mother's womb. And I don't know what was going on outside. You know, I may have heard my parents argue. You know, I saw fights about stupid stuff, and, you know, I thought that you know, that's how men treated women. My dad treated women like sex objects. But I wasn't with him when I was growing up in my formative pre-adolescent years, except on weekends. But I still somehow got that same message. And it was wrong. And my mom, like I said, was very much liberated after they got divorced. She got involved in the women's movement. And I grew up with two very strong women, her and my sister, who taught me that women can be firefighters, women can be CEOs, you know, that women should be equals to men, that they're not subservient and they don't have to stay barefoot and in the kitchen and raise the kids. So I grew up believing that, but I didn't put it into practice. For some reason, I just missed that step. I went straight to the old patterns and behaviors that my father did. And it's a damn shame, because I really wanted to be that guy. You know, when I was growing up, every older man wanted to be like Alan Alda. You know, they all wanted to be this sensitive, caring man who treated women equally and all this. And I wanted to be that guy, but I didn't turn out to be that guy. And I don't blame the alcoholism. I don't blame the drug addiction. I think that was just a symptom of all of the causes and conditions that I'm finding out that were handed to me in this bundle from my parents. And they did the best they could, you know, and I tried to do the best I could, but a lot of my weaknesses and my character defects come from not having good role models. So again, it's not blaming, it's just, it is what it is. That's how it was growing up. Today, you know, it's joyful, it's loving, it's happy, it's sad, it's not perfect. But the two of us work things out together, and it's so much better to have someone who understands that you don't have to be perfect, that we're human, that we make mistakes, and that we have the tools now to make ourselves into better people, that we want to work towards spiritual growth and honesty and understanding. And that's why I fell in love with her. That's why I married her. I couldn't be with someone who was addicted, who was always thinking that the fault lay with the other person. You know, we own our own mistakes. We own our shit. We own our character defects. Sometimes it takes a little while. And for me, you know, I'm still learning about getting in touch with my inner child and this whole self-care, self-love thing. But, you know, for me, self-love today means taking a break, pausing, not reacting, thinking about what my part in it is. You know, so many times, sometimes in the night, but so many times during the week, I have to do a little fourth step or a tenth step and do a quick inventory and go, okay, what was the cause of this? And why am I reacting this way? And why am I thinking this way? And why am I treating her this way? It's not her fault. It's what I was taught. It's those survival traits that I always fall back on. I like to use the analogy of an old coat. I was going to wear one of my old coats today, but, you know, she and I have talked about it a lot. It's, you know, when we're agitated, when we're irritated, when we're sad, when we're angry, we put on that old coat. And it's threadbare, and the elbows are worn, and it looks ugly, and it's old, but it's comfortable. It fits. You know, I feel snug and warm and comforted in that old coat. I know it looks bad, but I still put that old coat on because it's comfortable. I could put on the new coat that's shiny and new and maybe a little itchy and it isn't comfortable and it doesn't quite fit right yet, but I got to break that one in. So that's what I'm doing, is I'm trying to break in the new Kevin. I'm trying to break in these new behaviors and new patterns of acting that I never have used before. And I have to, because I'm involved with another person. This other person has needs and wants and desires and ambitions of her own. It's not all about me anymore. I have to include her in my plans. And that's what we do now. We work together. When things are really working, we work together towards a common goal. And we talk about things and we're honest about our feelings. It's still really, really difficult for me to express how I'm really feeling. And some of that comes from the abandonment. I'm afraid if I tell her what I'm really feeling, she's going to be angry and then she might leave me or she might not love me anymore. I go back to that old self-abandonment, you know, and abandoning myself in my true emotions. And it's hard. It's an uphill climb, but it's so worth it. It is really worth it. I've finally found someone that I can love and who loves me. And we're equals. We're both working on ourselves. We're both trying to patch each other and ourselves together as we go through this life, And I wouldn't have it any other way. One of the things that I wrote down that I heard in a meeting, I kind of paraphrasing, but I was denying myself the pleasures in life growing up. This led to self-pity and a feeling of undeserving and self-punishment. And what I'm doing today in this work and in this program is tearing through the veil of denial and glimpsing my true self in those pieces of the mirror. So when I look in the mirror, you know, I don't see a whole person. I see this fragmented person. There's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I'm trying to put that together, but there's nothing sticking it together. There's like this, I don't know, opposite magnetic force that is sort of pushing all the pieces away, and that's the denial. It's all the denial I've been living with for all these years. And Monica is the glue. She's what helps stick that all together and is making me become that whole person. We will awaken to a wholeness that we never knew was possible. And I know it's possible. That's why I'm still here. I want all those pieces to come together. And it may take the rest of my life, but it's totally worth it. If you're new here, do the work. It's hard. Reach out to other people. Ask them how they do it. And ask them for help. It's one of the hardest things to do. But there's a reward at the end, and that is that freedom that we get by sharing with each other and being emotional and being vulnerable. You have to find someone that you can be vulnerable with and trust enough that they're not going to take advantage of you. We don't take advantage of each other. You know, we don't intentionally push each other's buttons. Sometimes I act like her father and I don't know I'm doing that. She has to tell me. Sometimes she says things that kids or girlfriends used to tease me about in the past. She doesn't know she's doing that. I have to tell her, you know, oh, that girl, blah, blah, and she used to do the same thing. And that's reminding me of it. So it's triggering me and I'm reaching for that old coat and I'm going to put those behaviors to work. I'm going to put that shield on me, all of those, you know, traits that we have that helped us survive. And in the end, I hope that I can break through and start wearing that new coat, even though it's not comfortable yet. But it's a new coat, it's a new life, and I'm really grateful for all of you to help me develop that new life here today. Thanks.
I think we're finished, right? Well, welcome to everyone. I was getting really nervous because Wednesday Kevin was telling me about all the people at the Wednesday meeting. He felt like a celebrity. And then he heard from his sponsor last night that it was put on Facebook, and I was like, oh, and ever since, and I go through this, I'm so excited to speak and share my story because I've made so much progress and I feel like such a different person than where the beginning of my life started. And when Georgie asked me a little, maybe a month and a half ago, I was like, yes. And then what's gone on the past month and a half, and I've been sharing with Kevin, is I've been having these nightmares about ex-boyfriends. They're all just coming back to visit. But it's amazing because in my dreams, I have my program and I have my tools, and I can see them for who they are and accept them, and I can just walk away. And then Kevin is always in the background. It's like he's the person that I'm supposed to end up with, and I did. So yes, I'm nervous. And if you're here tonight to learn about relationships, I just want to share something. I know absolutely nothing. My brother, I remembered as I was preparing, when I was in college, I invited he and some family members. I was receiving an award. And he paid me a really nice compliment. Part of it I took as a compliment. The other part, I just kind of said something inside my head. I didn't know what to do with it. He said, I don't understand. You just received this award. You're such a brainiac. You're a fierce athlete. You're brave and bold and you don't care. I mean, you put your whole heart into it. What's going on with the relationships? And I thought inside, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought, I am a relational moron. I have no idea what I'm doing. The things that I used to do was try harder. If I just try harder, I'll find the right person. And I brought some readings I wanted to start with tonight. I love these books. They speak to me. Let me see if I can see. The first one is page 304, relationships. And my endings in my relationships were always pretty painful. Adult children intuitively link up with other adult children in relationships and social settings. No matter how much we told ourselves that we wouldn't repeat the patterns of our parents, most of us reached adulthood and found ourselves inevitably attracted to others who came from similar backgrounds. It was like we could see each other in the dark. I had some type of special radar. My wiring was absolutely messed up, and for some reason it was like this magnetic pull. I would just be attracted to the addict or the alcoholic. This didn't just happen by accident. It was a well-established pattern that we saw all around us in childhood. I grew up in Orange County, some of you know that. I left 9, maybe 8 years ago, I can't remember, in May. Next month will be 7 years that my brother passed away of the disease. He was only 32. And I left to get away from my dysfunctional family. As a really good fellow traveler put it, I've divorced myself from my parents so I can survive, because they are so unhealthy for me that when I left Orange County, I was having suicidal thoughts and severe anxiety. I had a few accomplishments. I had been laid off from teaching, and this anxiety and these suicidal thoughts were settling in, and I didn't know what was going on. And I finally realized that I was allowing them back into my life after I had been laid off from my job, and they were helping me financially. Our family was amazing. It was huge. I come from a Spanish Aztec background. There were 14 on my dad's side. There have been at least, I would say, since my brother's passing, at least, well, all together, starting with my dad. My dad's dad died of the disease when he was 56. My dad was a 12-year-old boy, and he was the first one to go into cardiac arrest from being an alcoholic. So there's been about 12 people in our family. Another, the second that went into cardiac arrest was my aunt, and my brother was the third, that have died of the disease. A suicide attempt, one of my cousins rode his motorcycle into a tree, killed himself. So there's been drugs and alcohol, and everybody just kind of looks the other way. It's part of our Spanish culture. We don't talk about it. People drink. There were lots of fun activities. And they would usually end up, whatever it was, I remember being terrified, and I was thinking about all these memories and things as I was living through them. I felt like it was a silent movie where I was just so struck with terror and fear. I couldn't hear anything. I was just frozen, and I could just see what was happening. And the events would end with my dad being completely wasted, trying to kill one of his brothers, and everyone trying to pry him off, or strangers at a softball game at a park, him picking a fight, or a softball tournament. We had gone to a restaurant, he got drunk, and three of the sets of the parents and my parents were walking back to the parking lot in a car, just happened to brush by my dad. My dad went and knocked on the window and was trying to get the guy out of the car so he could beat the crap out of him. Some of my earliest memories were at 5 years old, my dad used to beat the crap out of my mom. And it was either the police coming over or aunts and uncles trying to pry him off. And he would pull his shotguns out, his hunting rifles and knives. And again, it was just that silent, I couldn't hear anything. I was just frozen. I didn't know. I don't think I cried. I just held everything in. I'm shaking a little bit talking about it. And that abuse from my mom kind of transferred over to me. If I'm making mistakes at a very early age, I got hit. I'm able, because of this program, to share and talk about it. I was so afraid of him, it got to the point where he would hit me, I would wet my pants, but it got to the point where he would be coming down the hall in a rage, I would wet my pants because I was so scared. And then I would be shoved half naked under a dark bed or locked in a black closet. So those are the things that he did and how sick he was. And I understand, like Kevin said, that our parents did the best they could, but he has no tools and he won't speak to me today because I'm not supposed to talk about this or trust anyone or feel anything, because the problem was me. Growing up, I started running away. That was my survival skill. Run away, get away. By the time I was 18, I moved out. The first time, my mom also used to hit me a lot, in the face. She'd break paddles over my head, brushes on the bottom. And this one time, it was the summer, she was on top of me, she had my hair, she was slamming me on the bed, and I said, I wish I were dead. And she said, what? And I said it again. I don't even know where it came from. I said it, she grabbed me by the neck, threw me out of the house. I sat on the curb crying. I was barefoot in my pajamas, which was my PE shorts and tank top that I wore to bed. I don't know who or how, but I walked up the street, borrowed 60 cents for the bus, and I took the bus across town to a friend's house. And that just started my whole career of running away and trying just to survive, because along with the physical abuse, there was sexual abuse from my dad, from cousins, from neighbors. And my dad started treating me when I was in my early teens like I was some tramp. And they knew, and my mom knew, and she never ever protected me. She was always, always on his side. And I knew something was wrong. Let me fast forward a little bit. So by the time I was 18, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. And I never ever, and Kevin knows this because I've said this, I've never wanted to get married because of what I saw them going through. But yet throughout high school, I always had a boyfriend. And if we were about to break up, that painful ending, there were two waiting. I was waiting. Those two were waiting in the back. I always had to have someone to fill up that hole in me, to make me feel whole, to want and love me, because along with the physical abuse I was getting to was the verbal abuse. I was told, you're not wanted, you're not good enough, you're not skinny enough. You know, if I had blemishes on my face, my dad would tear me down. I had a lot of responsibilities. If I didn't wash the car correctly, he wouldn't tell me to wash their cars, and then he'd go with his white glove and check like the interior and everything, and it was like by osmosis I was supposed to know, you know, all these unspoken expectations of what I was supposed to do. So I struggle with that perfectionism today. My relationships continued from high school through college. I started to feel a shift, and I knew there was something wrong. I didn't know what it was. I'm extremely grateful to them today because they sent me to a counselor when I was in the eighth grade to find out, why is she running away? Well, I didn't trust anyone, so I never told the counselor what was really going on at home. I just remembered the last session of him asking if I wanted to be in the room when he spoke with my parents, and I did not, because I thought if I said something wrong, I was going to get beat when I got home. And I remember my parents leaving and me in trail and just saying, my dad shaking his head saying, we don't understand why she keeps running away. You know, told, you're not wanted, you're not loved, hit, humiliated in public, humiliated in the worst ways at home in front of my mom. My dad would manipulate the truth. He would do something to me and then tell my mom something else, and she never believed me, but she was there the entire time. So my relationships in college got really interesting until I met Kevin. And I'm so grateful for all those relationships and boyfriends, because I learned something and I carry something good from those relationships today, and they helped me get to where I was supposed to be, married to Kevin and in recovery. And even though none of them worked out, as I started to prepare for this share, I remembered still feeling that hole, even though I was in a relationship, even though they would say that they loved me, but yet the abuse in different ways was repeated, and knowing at my core that I couldn't stay with this person because they were involved in their addiction and it wasn't going to work. And they were eventually going to leave me. That was the other big thing. Was growing up, my dad would take off. And every Friday, I was only five, my mom would put me in the back of their VW bug and go from bar to bar looking for him by his job. But the first relationship, let's see, as I started to think, I was like, wow, and I shared this with Kevin because I can't remember if I shared it before. But I have had three restraining orders against three different men. And the first one was not someone that I was dating. He wanted to date me, and I refused. We played in this soccer class together, and he just, like, I saw how his friends took advantage of him, and I just didn't want to date him. And I remember he told me to my face in front of my girlfriend, I'm going to rape you, because isn't that the way women like to be spoken to? And that didn't happen, but he did sexually assault me, and I did get a restraining order. And then a few years later, I met my first fiancé. That was a wonderful relationship. I learned a lot from him. I'm so grateful because he trained me in how to lift weights. He wanted to be a pro baseball player. We were really young in college. And I went with him for a year and a half straight, and he trained me, and I played soccer. And I think it changed after we got engaged. He was late. He had taken money from me. He didn't have any drug or alcohol addictions, but he had a porn addiction that I found out about early on. And I thought, oh, well, I'll be here and be your friend and be by your side and get some help. You know, I didn't know anything about pornography at all. Well, it got worse and worse and worse, and I was absolutely sick to my stomach. I could see how neurotic I was, and I don't know. I remember one night having to rush to the restroom every time to go to the bathroom because I was just so sick to my stomach, like full of this anxiety, because he was out somewhere. I didn't know till the very end, after the 8 years of the relationship, that he was cheating the whole time that we were together. It's like, wow. But yet he was stalking me the last 3 years after I had called off our engagement. And he started to get a little physical. I remember towards the end, within that 3 year time frame when we were separate, he switched colleges. He had already had his school paid for by his parents at UC Irvine, so he came to the university that I was at, failed out of that. We had broken up. We were arguing on the phone one night. He drove all the way from his house to mine in 20 minutes and was banging on the door to get in, and I was terrified, and I called the police. And he left by the time they got there. When I got outside, it looked like an animal had shredded the screen on my window. And I just was so sick to my stomach, and the officers just whipped this, give me this little pamphlet, you need to get a restraining order. I didn't do it. I thought, oh, he'll leave me alone. The second time he came back, he knew I was home by myself, and he, my sister had just left. We shared the same apartment. Thankfully, there was like this frosted glass down below, and there was a door up here, and I could just peek outside, and he was knocking, and I saw the silhouette of his jacket that I had bought him. It was him. So I called the police. They had me get off the phone when they arrived. I let the police in, and they had him cuffed. And I went through with the restraining order because he would not leave me alone. So that was what my relationships were like. The nice boys, you know, and I closed my eyes, and I remembered three from high school through college. I didn't want anything to do with them because it was so boring. No. They were nice and probably normal, and I just didn't feel that intense fire and passion, and I thought, they're going to find out who I really am, and I didn't even know who I was, and they're not going to like me, you know. And I remember the last one, or maybe the middle one in college, Rob. He was really cute. He was a soccer player. We played on the men's soccer team together, and I was with the first fiancé. He's like, what are you doing? Can't you see what he's doing? And I just felt so bad because, again, there was this magnetic connection to this person who was addicted, and I couldn't even go to the other person. I didn't think I expected to be, I believed I didn't expect to be treated well or the best. So the last two relationships, I didn't get engaged. These were the serious relationships, the middle one, and he was emotionally abusive, started to get physically abusive, and found out was cheating on me again. And I think it was Christmas Day. I was supposed to pick him up at the airport. And usually every Christmas I'd fly back east with him and spend Christmas with his family. And for some reason I could not go. I'm like, if I stay in this relationship and if I get married, I'm going to die. And I had a dream about that. So I left. I called his buddy, baseball buddy, can you go pick him up at the airport? No, I can't. Well, I'm not going to be here. And I split all the way up to Atascadero. I just left. And New Year's Day we broke up and never spoke again. And then the last one, and thankfully for the first two, I started to develop a little bit of a voice. So the next one after I took a year off was the third fiancé, and he started to get physically abusive. I'm grateful because I rescued my dog from his family. He kicked my dog. He shoved me down, tried to kick me a couple times, and by the third time, I think I started fighting back, and I was just like, this is done. And again, the stalking just continued for a year. You know, and I think my part in it was, I saw what my mom went through, and I remember feeling that gut feeling in the very first relationship was, have to help him and I have to love him. I'm going to love him enough until he changes. I'm going to love him enough until he loves me and he loves himself. And I have to stay because my mom stayed and they're still married. I can't remember. I don't even know how many years my parents have been married. So that was the whole fun history. It was pretty crazy. There was drinking involved. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm an Al-Anon and obviously an adult child. And then fast forwarding to Kevin, before I met him, like I said, I moved away from Orange County. I had a friend who had been in AA. Her story was similar to mine. She started a nonprofit for survivors of sexual abuse. There were 16 in her family. Her dad was the pastor, and he was raping the girls and molesting the boys. And four of her boys by that time had died. So while I was up in Cambria, she was my counselor down here. We kept in close contact, and I knew her story. I read her book, and she was a great, amazing friend. And I asked her one day, I just felt higher power led to go to Al-Anon. I said, what do you think? And she said, I think that would be great. So I started Al-Anon up there, and it wasn't until I moved here, because they had one ACA workshop that I went into. I remember they were just starting ACA in Cambria. And for the first time, I went at the end or the middle, I heard them talk about the sexual abuse. And I had no idea that that was part of this disease as well. And I just felt sick to my stomach, I wasn't ready, and I didn't stay. I just listened for a little bit and then I left. I didn't feel safe, I couldn't trust, I couldn't feel my feelings. So the story about Kevin. So because my wiring is so messed up, I was dating someone up there. That went south. I ended up homeless, living on a winery with my dog, with another alcoholic family. Got out of that, found a temporary place until I moved to Cambria, and my friend, her name's Claire, I'll just say her name instead of the whole title. I said, all right, I'm going to make a commitment to you, and I want you to hold me accountable. I don't know what my problem is. Something's wrong. I can't get these stupid relationships right. I'm not going to date anybody for a year, and that's it. And I went to work. I started working for a nonprofit. I found a new super cute place to live. It was hidden. You could not find me and my dog. And the lady that I rented from was amazing. We hit it off. We spent 3 hours together. She had rescue dogs, and she was like, we'll take care of your dog. So it was great. So I worked for this nonprofit, and that's all I did was focus on working and helping people, whatever hour of the night they called, just so I didn't have to feel anything, and I'd stay home by myself. Then the second year started to roll around, and something inside me, I felt probably higher power, was saying, it's time to date. And I was like, oh no, I'm not ready. And she said the same thing. She said, I think it's time you start to come out of your shell. And I had some older women friends in Al-Anon. They were like aunts and mothers, and they were saying, oh, we're so worried about you. There's no one here in Cambria. You're not going to meet anybody. Everybody's retired and old. And, and I said, you know, if I have to move to Sweden, I'll move. I don't care. I'll move. I'm not worried. When I get there, I get there. So I'm not sure what the exact saying is when someone relapses in alcohol with their addiction, that it's like 10 times worse. Well, when I came out of my dating hiatus, it was 10 times worse, the person I met. He was a complete mess. He was an alcoholic, addicted to prescription medicine. But because I had a little bit of program, my gut was going off and I could tell something wasn't right. So that was pretty short-lived. And before I was ready, a year before, when I was still on my break, and Kevin and I had met later, he was telling me the story about how he was trying to talk to me that day in my car. And I whipped my head up, and I remember, and I'm like, oh, all I remember seeing was like shoes and jeans and all of that. And I peeled out of that parking lot. So this whole dating thing, it was ending with this other guy, and Kevin's sponsor had asked to help set up for the sober New Year's Eve party. So I said, sure. So he and I were the only ones that showed up. And he talked the whole time. We were putting the Christmas lights up and the decorations, and it was only he and I, and I'm like, he probably has a girlfriend or he's married. Great. You know, but he talked the whole time, and I found out later that he was nervous. So, of course, I had three parties to go to, and that crazy guy invited me to a nice dinner party, so I went to that. I dropped off some tamales at the sober AA New Year's Eve party, and I left. I didn't I didn't see Kevin at all. But we did join the board. I had a counselor at the time, and I for 5 months, we were really good friends. I had kind of taken a break from the Al-Anon, but I was going to the AA speaker meetings and really learning a lot about the disease, and my brother had just passed, so I was understanding a lot of what was going on, the addictions, and why my wiring was so messed up, and why my parents were the way they were, and I had these patterns and behaviors from the past that just weren't serving me. And about 5 months into our friendship, I guess he said he was courting me, I told my counselor, I kind of whipped my head up, and I'm like, this guy is really genuine. He's such a gentleman. He's so respectful. He's not tried to grope me or make any sexual advances. I think I like him. And thanks to one of his friends that lives here in Santa Barbara who was there that weekend, it was May 3rd, it was a Friday, I remember. And I had been there a couple times at the hotel visiting Kevin, and this was the second time his friend was there, and he's like, how's your girlfriend Monica? Not in front of me, to Kevin. So Kevin brought it up, and I said, so, what do you think? You know, and that just kicked off the whole conversation. I felt like we were two little kids in elementary school holding hands, because there were some grouchy women on the board, and I didn't know what the guidelines were if you're dating somebody or anything, and we decided to make that commitment to be boyfriend and girlfriend and be exclusive. Recovery I found here, ACA, my Al-Anon sponsor, after Kevin moved me here and after we got married, felt that I needed something a little bit deeper. I was having still severe anxiety. I wasn't feeling my feelings. I'm addicted to keep moving, keep going, help everybody else. Sports is my main thing. Just keep moving. Run yourself into the ground. And she said one day to me, I think you should go to ACA. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I tried it. And I was just too overwhelmed with being newly married, Kevin moved me here first, trying to get situated, trying to get a job situated. And then I think I went back a year later. I remember I just celebrated 2 years. June 29th was 2 years. And let me tell you, it's pretty embarrassing to talk about when your character defects come out. Because at the beginning, I would say, this is our fourth year being married, and I feel like I'm just starting to calm down. The first year was really stressful, but the first 3 years, I have been so rigid. I'm in control, I'm in charge, I'm gonna give 500%, you're gonna do it my way. And I feel like more than once, these foreign beings, and that's my dad and my mom, they just overtake me and I start to react and say things. I'm not violent or anything, but say things the way they would speak to me, and then be completely embarrassed and ashamed and have to apologize, and then be completely embarrassed and ashamed because I have to apologize because I've hurt this absolutely extraordinary man that loves me and that I love. So this past year, I've really had a lot of awareness as I deepened in my program. I know I have all these traits, and more than once I've shared with Kevin, I'm like, I don't know who I'm supposed to be in this marriage. Because in the past relationships, I was whoever you wanted me to be. The middle boyfriend, the Rhode Island guy, I would straighten my hair. I was super skinny. He wanted me to get a boob job. I went to visit a doctor once. His friend said, what is he thinking? You know, so I always had to look a certain way and not speak. I didn't have a voice. And then there was another guy that was around for 20 years. He's the one who keeps coming up in all my dreams 3 times. And he wanted my hair curly wild. And he just wanted to change me. And I remember when I met Kevin, I had told my friend, I said, I'll shower. I'm not going to brush my hair. It's cold in Cambria. I'm going to wear my clogs, my Levi's, and my thermals. No makeup, and that's it. And if he likes me, he likes me for who I am. And if he doesn't, oh well, then it's not meant to be. But because of these relationships and the recovery I started to gain, that's where the strength started to come. And I moved away from my family to break the cycle because I still, to this day, struggle. I still feel when I make mistakes, I talk to my sponsor, I'm in constant contact with her, what is wrong with me? And then I just shared this past Wednesday, as of lately, I hear my therapist and my sponsor's voice saying, you have 40 plus years of all this past, these false lies, these past behaviors and patterns ingrained in you, it's going to take some time. And then I'm able to cut myself some slack and be like, oh, I don't have to do it perfectly. Yeah, my dad was such a perfectionist. If you drop something, you get hit. If the kitchen isn't clean, our place, we're still, I call it merging of the two households. Things are still in boxes. Kevin's sister or cousin that was at our wedding said, "So what?" I'm like, "Really? Like, the whole house isn't cleaned and I haven't baked cookies and made brownies and homemade dinners, and that's okay that not everything is done." And she's like, "Who cares? So what? At the end of the day, is that really important?" But this program has helped me. I know last year when I was, when I spoke, I was having severe anxiety around that, and I didn't know before and after. Someone had recommended a supplement that I was on for a little bit. Why? And it was because I discovered that, well, I never lived with a guy full time. I just refused to go there, and Kevin's the first. So around a certain hour of the day, 2:30 or 3, I would get this anxiety. And it I remembered that when my dad would come home at that time, I would be in trouble and I would get hit. So some of the tools I still have to use are my ACS front. So can you go to the beach? Can you walk the dog? So sometimes I still have to leave, but it's lessened a lot. I pick up the phone. I call my sponsor. I talk to other fellow travelers. Someone gave me this profound advice a couple months ago. I was going through something. Again, not knowing who I'm supposed to be, she said, "What does Monica want?" I was like, "Oh, am I allowed to go there and do that?" I'm like, wow. So sometimes I ask myself, what do I want? And letting go of my people-pleasing skills with Kevin and letting him figure out his own journey and what he wants, because a lot of times if I go shopping or try to make a dinner or want to do something, his idea is completely different than what I think is going to make him happy. So I stop myself and ask myself, what is it that I want? I'll wrap up with these last two if I can see the book. Let's see. So relationships, I'm learning. We remember we can talk, trust, and feel instead of control, isolate, and fume. Relationships can be different in recovery. Through ACA, we realize our survival traits no longer serve us. When we consider emotional intimacy, when we feel scared and at risk for hurt. However, if we risk sharing ourselves with another, we become capable of having a true relationship. And it's because of this program, now I'm able to identify, okay, I haven't done all those things. I don't need to beat myself up. I haven't painted the house and mowed the lawn and whatever. And just Wednesday, I was feeling so overwhelmed with my giant 500-item to-do list, I was able to cry and tell Kevin, "I feel absolutely overwhelmed." And he said, "It's okay if the only thing you did today was take the dogs all the way to the vet and sit in traffic." And I just felt this relief and release of allowing myself to just do, I did a few more things that day, but just to be able to do that and then talk to my sponsor and share it with her, that a lot of times I wake up in the morning and I feel completely overwhelmed. That was the last one. And this is where I am today. Kevin gave me permission to read what he wrote. I'll read the first printed part in the card. It says, "Look back on where you've been. Look forward to where you will go. Look around at where you are and celebrate being exactly where you're meant to be at this very moment." This is for my birthday. "On the day that you were born, the angels got together and decided to create a dream." "Decided to create a dream come true. My love, I know that no card and gift could ever be enough to show how excited, thrilled, blessed, and lucky I am to have you as my wife. But I hope these small things will be enough to express my love for you, that I am so happy to be your husband and give you all the happiness you deserve. You bring me joy, and my wish is that we spend the rest of our lives together, becoming closer and better partners with each passing year. I am so grateful you were born and that Providence brought us together. You are my angel, and I thank God every day that you chose me to be a part of your life. I love you with all my heart, soul, and being." So I read these cards and I have them up just as a reminder when I think I'm not doing good enough and I can still hear my dad's voice, that this is where I am today and I need to stop and pause and celebrate. Last one. I love these books. So much great stuff in here. Let's see. So I'm learning recovery takes patience and persistence. I am naturally impatient. An important part of successful recovery is learning to accurately name the components of my inner life as they come up for me, including my various feelings and learning to be to tolerate emotional pain without trying to medicate it away. So my sponsor holds me accountable. I'm not allowed to take 5,000 more service commitments. And my husband as well. If I get the itch, I told him you have permission to sit on me, but I've been doing really well. I have a meditation practice every morning, and on the days that I'm feeling overwhelmed or tired, it goes into 30 or 40, and I break it up. It's like 10 minutes, it's guided, it's amazing. What is the other thing? And then there's a favorite author, I'll end with this, said once, and her background was pretty similar to mine. She said, I may have had a lousy beginning, but I am certainly going to have a strong finish. And this is the year that I'm reclaiming my life. Thank you, Finn.